The Separatists knew that we had a strong bunker and that we were determined to defend Nakfa to the end. They were determined to do whatever was necessary to take control of Nakfa. They moved in additional mortars, anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons, as well as heavy machine guns, and pushed forward, moving to about 100 meters from our trenches. They dug strong trenches that could withstand aerial bombardment and got ready to attack. The Separatists started throwing the hand grenades toward our trenches one after the other. Disregarding the explosions of the hand grenades, artillery, mortars, and anti-tank weapons, our troops waited patiently to engage them. When the enemy finally attacked, our soldiers gunned them down one after the other. The dead and the wounded piled up in front of our trenches, and those who survived turned their heads and retreated. Bringing fresh reserve forces onto the battlefield, the Separatists made another assault to take Nakfa. They lost many men to death and injury. Then, for some reason, the Separatists ceased their activities for a period. When the Separatists suffered a defeat in battle, or when hit too hard, they usually pulled back and examined the strengths and weaknesses seen during the action. They would take corrective actions to correct their weaknesses. They would increase their strengths. They collected detailed information about us as well. They prepared for the next battle. We would not get any resupply or reinforcements, so we had no special preparation to make. I had any wounded man who could still pull a trigger take a position along the trench. The next battle would be one to be remembered by generations to come, written in pain and blood. We were simply not able to resist a major assault by the enemy with our limited numbers and dwindling supply of ammunition. We already needed to sacrifice our lives heroically, as we have been shown by Balcha Abenefso and Emperor Tewodras II. This battle would not be long. We had no one behind us, no one in reserve, or to supply us with food or water. We could not leave our trenches to fetch water or prepare food. Every man would have his canteen filled with water, as well as 2 cans of food and 2 cans of dry bread shall be given out to each soldier. This food would be placed within easy reach or in a pocket if you still had one. Each man would take a single bullet from their magazine and place it in a separate pocket. This bullet would be used to take our own lives when we were certain that we were going to be captured by the enemy. As usual, we would attempt to shoot 2 enemies with 1 bullet, shooting 1 through the other. If any of our men were to break their oath and try to surrender to the enemy, we would kill him, as he is no different from the enemy. We also burned all orders, secret documents, and intelligence reports. If one of our defensive positions or guard posts was destroyed by the enemy, those men who survived would move quickly and reinforce the next closest trench. If the enemy pushes us out of the guard post to the west, those troops would move quickly to the battalion's headquarters and regroup there. To continue fighting, we would take the ammunition from our fallen brothers. Everybody would fix his bayonet to the muzzle of his rifle and be ready for hand-to-hand fighting. All activity in the evenings would stop, except fetching water, burying those who sacrificed their lives, and administering medical treatment. We equally distributed our remaining ammunition and hand grenades among ourselves. If we ran out of bullets, we would wait within the walls of the trenches until our enemies entered and engaged them with our bayonets. We would fight determinedly and valiantly to the last man. If I were to be killed or wounded to the extent that I would no longer lead my troops, Second Lieutenant Mekonnen Feysa would assume command. This was my final order. On the morning of March 22, 1977, the Nakfa area was covered with a dense fog due to the humid air coming in from the Red Sea. We could not see any further than 5 meters. Our jets could not give us air support due to the fog. It seemed that even nature conspired with the enemy. At 08:30 hours, the heavy guns of the enemy opened fire on all our defensive positions. Although the first rounds were fired at many targets, The main fire soon concentrated on the westernmost defensive position. This position was the key to control all our other defensive positions. Volume of the fire from the heavy guns shook the surrounding area like an earthquake. The grass, the trees, the bushes, and debris flew everywhere. The area was covered with smoke and fog. The shells landed on every trench, and it looked like nobody could possibly survive such a bombardment. The enemy troops fired rocket launchers at the openings of the trenches in an attempt to fire into them. It was clear that the separatists wanted to demolish the trenches and anyone in them. They planned to end the battle with this barrage. The shelling came to an end after 3.5 hours. The enemy troops then began their assault. The separatists did not expect any survivors. They didn't think that any of us could have possibly escaped death or injury from that barrage and be able to aim and pull a trigger. In the western defensive position, we had only 2 light machine guns and 8 M14 rifles. The troops stationed in this post were swift and courageous. They never missed a target and caught the hand grenades flung by the enemy in the air and flung them back. Our men did not give an inch. Then, at about 1300 hours, the M60 light machine gun and Sergeant Kebede Asafe were hit by the enemy with the recoilless M57 rifle. The machine gun was put out of action, the gunner and his assistant wounded. While this was still going on, some soldiers from the airborne unit tied white cloths on the muzzle of their rifles and waved them. They turned the muzzles on their rifles on us. Taking advantage of this situation, the separatists jumped into our trenches. The battle turned to hand-to-hand combat with bayonets. The intense fighting continued. Many of the enemy were killed. Many of my men lost their lives in Nakfa, as they had pledged to do. The few troops who survived followed orders and headed to headquarters to regroup again. Command and control were reestablished. We would defend the water well by joining the troops in the south. The enemy reorganized itself swiftly, brought a force infantry and heavy guns close to our southern area and our headquarters. The time was 1700 hours. The 2nd Division commander called me over the radio. On the way from my command post to the place where the radio was stationed, I was hit on my right leg. I was not aware that I'd been hit. The 2nd Division commander came over the radio asking for a situation report. "It is over," I said to him. "I too know that it is over. You are authorized to take whatever steps you think are appropriate," he said to me. "The only thing I can do at the last minute is take my own life when everything is finished. I will not allow myself to be taken by the enemy. Have no doubt about that." I thought for a minute before going on. "If possible, have our fighter jets drop their bombs on us and the enemy." "All right, I can do that," he said to me. I got off the radio. When I finished my conversation with the 2nd Division commander, the radio operator noticed the blood on my leg. "Sir, I think you've been hit." Pulling my trousers up, we looked at my leg. My shoes were covered with thick blood. The radio operator quickly took off his undershirt and tore strips from it. Dampening a strip with water, he first cleaned off the blood from the wound and then tied the strip a little above the wound so that the blood would stop oozing. He then covered the wound with the remaining strip. I thanked him and returned to my command post. Since the bullet remained in my leg, it became quite painful and gradually prevented me from folding and stretching my leg. I heard fighter jets. I was happy because if we somehow lacked the courage to take our own lives, the fighter jets would destroy us with the enemy. The area was covered with fog throughout the day. In the afternoon, the weather became worse. Due to the fog, the fighter jets could not do anything and flew patterns overhead, waiting for the fog to clear. Eventually, they returned to Asmara. The battle intensified in the southern area around our headquarters. That evening, the fog covered the entire area. Men only 10 meters apart could not see each other. members of the regional police force guarding the southern area, hidden behind the fog, defected to the enemy. Many of our surviving soldiers, on the other hand, made their way to our headquarters rallying point. The water well had fallen into enemy hands. It was getting dark. At 1800 hours, our headquarters was assaulted by the enemy. The only area that remained under our control was the guard post to the east. We all headed to the eastern defensive position. As the trench was small, it could not accommodate us all. Many troops stood outside the trench. Several of them were struck by bullets while standing outside the trench. If we die, why should it be by random bullets while standing here? Why don't we attack and kill the enemy or die in the attempt? What is there left to us? I pondered these questions. We destroyed our long-range radio so that the enemy would not make use of it. We'd already burned any important documents. We had not enough men to gather or move the wounded among us. The wounded outnumbered the non-wounded. The water well that was so critical to our survival, as well as our trench, had fallen to the enemy. There was little chance of regrouping ourselves to launch a strong enough counteroffensive to recover our trench. I gathered my troops and asked them what they thought about my plan to attack the enemy. They agreed unanimously that we should attack. Placing our guns in the middle of our formation, we lined up and advanced towards the northeast where our enemies were stationed. As we approached the trenches of the enemy, we opened fire. Bayonets on the ready, we rushed into the enemy trenches. The separatist troops fled. We were astounded. We had control of an area free of enemy soldiers. We headed towards Afabet without waiting for orders to do so. We joined up with Major Mamo Temitime, who told us he could no longer move forward, handing us a letter he had written to a soldier he trusted. He told the soldier to give this letter to his family if the soldier survived. Then Major Mamo turned off the trail and limped into the rocks and brush. A few minutes later, we heard a pistol shot. We presumed that he took his own life with his pistol. After walking a while longer with a few tired, wounded soldiers, I found that bullet in my leg was causing me a great deal of pain and slowing me down. I was carrying one hand grenade and an M14 rifle with two 20-round magazines. "I will come along slowly as best I can," I said to the soldiers who were accompanying me. "Do not let me slow you down. Keep on going forward." Now I was alone. The air was cold. There was a full moon in the sky, but it was hazed over by fog.